Maybe she should just pack up and head back to Milwaukee. Her arrival seemed to have brought more trouble to the people she loved. I showed the picture to some people at the ice cream shop. I think the girl behind the counter recognized her, but she wouldn't say anything. I'm going to start hanging out there. His lips flattened, and his nostrils flared. His words came out clipped and hoarse. Just leave it alone. Do you want to hurt her? Hannah stared at his face. Was that anguish in his eyes? You know where she is, don't you? The air thickened around her, close and still, as she waited for his answer. Just forget it, Hannah. He turned his back to her and went to unlock the house. But she knew why he wouldn't look. Her daughter was with someone he knew. But who? She rubbed her forehead. Oh, she was jumping to conclusions. If he knew, he'd tell her. What did he have to gain from hiding anything? She was so used to Reese's games, she questioned everyone's motives. 15. The pineapple quilt has long been a symbol of hospitality, and the Amish can welcome you to their home like no others. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Lights blazed from the house into the thickening twilight. Reese hurdled a fence in the backyard and fell onto his knees in the mud. The wet soaked through his jeans, and he swore as he stumbled to his feet and crept toward the house, shaking mud from the stake he carried. At least the dog didn't come snarling to face him down. The recent rain had left the yard a mess, and his foot plunged into something soft, followed by an unmistakable odor. The dog was destined to leave his mark anyway. Reese bit back the vicious words that wanted to spew out. Someone might hear. After cleaning his shoe on the wet grass, he finally made it to the window that looked into the kitchen. The wide opening between the kitchen and living room revealed the women sitting on the sofa watching TV. The lamplight lit Hannah's loose hair. It had been up when he caught a glimpse of her through the open door when she was talking to Vanessa. He loved her locks spread out across her shoulders. The red glinted so brightly. He could feel the texture of her hair in his hand, the silken strands twining around his fingers. He should have known better than to take the kid from her. He'd underestimated her maternal instinct. If she just explained it to him better, he would have made a different decision. He'd only tried to do what was best. His every thought was of her and their love. They'd be together again, the three of them. The dog lifted his head, his ears flicking. Reese ducked out of view and moved around to the back door. He'd hide out in the garage until the time was right. Then he would go see Hannah. He longed to feel her softness, to feel her fragrant breath waft over his face. They'd been apart too long. Maybe she was missing him by now. The storm thundered overhead as if in approval. But first, a minor matter needed his attention. Reese picked the lock with a tool he'd had for years, then opened the door noiselessly. He whistled softly, and Ajax came padding to the rear entrance. He sniffed Reese's hand. "Good, Ajax," he crooned. The dog wiggled with delight and came out onto the porch. Reese pulled out a stake loaded with tranquilizer. "Want to take a little nap, boy?" He dropped the meat on the patio and watched as Ajax gobbled it up. He wanted to start the ball rolling, but Hannah deserved every possible chance to come with him of her own free will. It was the only way he'd ever fully trust her again. She had to want him. Only him. He had to convince her he had converted. Maybe he could get his bishop to write a letter. He settled down to wait until Ajax was out. Matt rubbed his eyes. The clock on his wall read 8 o'clock. And he should have been off duty hours ago. He ached to see his daughter. The flowers sent to Hannah today had been chock full of strychnine, but at least Ajax hadn't inhaled enough through the box and paper to hurt him. He stared at the folder on his desk. Matt knew the background check on Hannah might contain anything. Did he really want to know? "Aren't you going to take a look at it so we can go home?" Blake asked. "Yeah, sure." Matt flipped it open and began to read. "Did you look at it yet?" "Yep. Reese was a nasty guy to her. from the looks of it. There are 3 hospital reports in there, all emergency room visits. Broken arm, broken nose, Matt said. A concussion on one visit. The hospital personnel wanted her to press charges on that one, and she refused. Said she fell down the steps. Matt wanted to hurt someone, preferably Reese. Any man who hit a woman was a coward, and Reese had done more than just slap her around. He had hurt her badly. She disappeared from the hospital after giving birth, prematurely at home, but the fetus was never found. The detectives questioned him, but it doesn't look like a warrant was ever issued. So, she escaped him. Do we have any idea what she's been doing for the past 5 years? Blake asked. She told me she worked for a museum. Milwaukee, I think. Want me to see what I can dig up in Wisconsin? I don't think it's necessary. It's pretty clear she was running from Reese. Anything new on him? Yeah. Blake tossed another folder on his desk. Matt glanced through the report. It didn't surprise him. He hasn't worked anywhere longer than a few months at a time over the past few years. Odd jobs, a stint or two as a guard. He sure floated around. I think he was probably looking for Hannah. Matt closed the folder. He flipped open the main folder that contained the copies he'd made from Hannah's notes. What's that? Blake peered over his shoulder at the drawings. From the first murders 10 years ago. The word anathema and a peace symbol. Seems weird. Also, called Nero's Cross or the Broken Cross, according to Hannah. We pursued the peace symbol, checking out various groups in the area. I'm not sure how we missed its other meaning, maybe because it's so obscure. Blake raised his brows, and his tone was skeptical. Isn't peace what the Amish believe in? They won't even serve in the military or take any kind of government assistance, peace or protest. The same symbol represents the annihilation of faith or peace with everyone. Weird, don't you think? Hannah thinks this instance is about annihilation, a declaration of war against everything the Amish stand for, a hate crime. You think it's Reese? Why would he hate the Amish? The woman he loved was Amish. He must have seen something good in them, and now he says he's converted, too, and joined a district in Shipshawana in northern Indiana. I could check that out. Go to Shipshawana. Good idea. Do that. He glanced at his watch. It's what, 4 hours or a little over? Head up there in the morning and stay until you find the bishop of his district. See what he tells you. Okay, but what if none of this is true? What's Reese want? He wants Hannah to come back to him. His gaze went back to the files. And Reese probably wanted Caitlin, too. Matt had to figure out what to do. At least Caitlin was hidden where Hannah couldn't find her. Whether Reese knew of Caitlin's whereabouts was another question. Any sign of lurkers out your way? Nope. I think Gina was imagining things when she thought someone followed her. But I've got all the security systems activated, and Gina packs that small pistol in her purse. She can handle anyone who tries to mess with her or Caitlin. Matt wished he could confide in Blake and Gina about why Caitlin had to be hidden. And just who was after her? Carrying this burden alone was wearisome, but he'd do anything to keep his daughter. Hannah's hope, which had seemed so bright that afternoon, fizzled with the sundown. Hannah began to question whether she was on a wild goose chase. It looked like the little girl had a loving family. Did she have any right to disrupt that kind of happiness? And her accusation of Matt proved she was getting a little off kilter. She needed to get her mind on something else. "Let's cut my hair," she said. Angie had been after Hannah to let her cut it for months. "What did you say?" "I'm not kidding. Let's cut it." Hannah jumped up and tugged Angie to her feet. "I'm ready. After I left Reese, I rejected anything that might make me attractive to men. I hated the clothes he made me wear, the come-hither hairstyle. I think I went too far the other way. I've used my professional status as an excuse, but I've always known the real reason." "Why now?" Angie's sly smile came. "Does the handsome detective have anything to do with it?" Hannah averted her eyes. "Of course not. Fox and Friends is coming next week. I want to look nice. Uh-huh. If you say so. Angie turned toward the kitchen. You don't have to tell me twice. I'll get the scissors. Any idea what you want me to do? I'm in your hands. She grinned at the delight on Angie's face and followed her to the kitchen. Something outside, a branch or the wind, caught her attention. Did you hear something? Hannah tipped her head to one side. No. Angie pushed her into a chair. Come on, let's do it before you change your mind. It won't hurt a bit. That's what you think. Just a trim. Angie lifted a long lock of Hannah's hair. It's all thin on the ends. We'll trim a couple of inches and give it a few layers. You'll be amazed at how much better it looks. Her family already thought she was some kind of heathen. Do it fast. Angie sprang into action. Just close your eyes. I'll be gentle. Minutes later, locks of russet hair lay around her in a heap. Did she even dare look at it or touch it? Her scalp felt light as air. An odd sensation. Reaching up, she ran her hand through her hair. She had been shorn. A smile played at her lips. She should have done this years ago. You look amazing. Angie's lips tilted in a smile. Go look. Hannah went to the small half bath off the living room. Her hair was still long, reaching just past her bra, but the ends were straight and even, and the long layers Angie had cut into it released the natural curl. It didn't even look like hers. She seemed different, wiser. And maybe she was. Can I still put it up? Yes, but you're not going to. You're going to start wearing it down. It's gorgeous and needs to be admired. I don't want to draw too much attention to myself, except from Matt. The stray thought made her cheeks burn. She was still a married woman. Angie came up behind her. Now, for a little makeup, though you really don't need it. Your skin is so perfect. I think this is enough for one day, Hannah said. Nope, we're going the whole hog. Sit still. Angie stroked on eyeshadow and blush. You look amazing. Now, for the clothes. I want you to see what you look like in something that fits. It's nearly time for bed, Hannah said, glancing at her reflection one more time. Was that really her? This won't take long. I've got a dress that will look killer on you. Angie grabbed her hand and dragged her down the hall. Just try it on. The spare room had a full-length mirror, and Hannah averted her eyes from it. Growing up, she'd been taught it was wrong to dwell on her appearance, and until she'd moved away with Reese, she'd never even seen herself in a full-length mirror. Even now, she found it hard to examine her body. Angie slid open the closet door and pulled out an umber sheath Hannah had seen her wear once. It was silky beneath her fingers, alluring. "I don't think so," she said, thrusting it back into Angie's hand. She shuddered at the memories that flooded her. Just for a second, her friend coaxed. She pushed it back into Hannah's hands. Can I go to bed afterward? No more making me over. Okay, for tonight anyway. I want to knock the socks off the producers next week. Hannah sighed and slipped off her long skirt and blouse. Angie slid the dress over her head and it fell over her body in a soft shimmer. Angie's eyes widened and her mouth dropped open. Wow, you look amazing. The hem stopped at the top of her knees. The fabric was more like that of a nightgown than a dress. Hannah ran her palm over her hip. The material barely covered her, and she shivered when the cool air touched her heated skin. Here, put these on. Angie pulled out a pair of strappy tan sandals. Just get it over with. Hannah stepped into the shoes and turned to look at the stranger in the mirror. The dress fit perfectly, outlining her shape. The color made her skin glow, and her hair seemed brighter by contrast. I look like a streetwalker, she said. Okay, maybe I used a little too much blush and eyeshadow, but you look beautiful, Angie said. Where was the line between tasteful and overboard? Where was the balance? Just like fine quilts, a good life required balance. She hadn't found it yet. This dress wasn't her. Her fingers grabbed the hem and began to yank it upward just as the back door banged. "Is someone here?" She jerked the fabric down to her knees again and rushed down the hall. Reese stood in the doorway. Dressed in black pants and a white shirt, he looked like a typical Amish man.
"How pretty you look, hon. Did you dress up just for me?"
He crossed the distance between them in four steps and grabbed her arm. "We need to talk." The strength left Hannah's muscles.
"Reese, what are you doing here?"
Angie grabbed Hannah's other hand. "Let go of her!"
"This isn't your concern," Reese said. "If you know what's good for you, you'll get to your room and keep your trap shut. Otherwise, I'll have to shut it for you."
"It's okay," Hannah said. "I'll talk to him." She glanced from Angie to the phone. Angie nodded. "I'll be in my room. Call if you need me." Hannah could still feel Reese's eyes on her, stripping her of her self-regard, exposing her weakness, her guilt. Even with the darkest cloak of night around her, he would find her. She could travel to Tibet and make her home with the monks, and he would know. It was hopeless to dream of a life without his shadow blotting out the sunshine. She found her voice.
"Leave me alone, Reese. I don't want to talk to you."
"Let's sit in the living room." His fingers tightened on her wrist, and he tugged her to the sofa. She sank onto it, all strength gone. How long before the Rockville police showed up, or Matt? Reese settled beside her.
"I thought you'd want to hear an update on our daughter."
"Our daughter is dead. You killed her."
"Oh, she's very much alive, Hannah. She's been looking for her mommy. She needs you. I'm not good with kids."
You don't have her."
He coiled a lock of hair around his finger. "Are you sure?"
"Hon, we belong together. You know it too. Quit fighting how you feel.
No one has ever loved me like you. I'm lost without you. Come home. We'll settle in Shipshawana. The bishop there has promised to help you repent and come under his guidance."
Hannah wanted to shut out the seductive sound of his voice. He was always able to make her doubt herself. She desperately wanted to know more, but she knew he was playing with her, toying with the scalding emotions that burned her chest. "Where is she?"
"With me. Don't you think she deserves a mother and a father?"
His voice dropped to a softer pitch, sweet and gentle.
"Come home, Hannah, and we'll forget everything, all the past hurts. I won't hit you again, I promise."
Hannah steeled herself against the pleading tone. "It's a promise you can't keep, Reese. I don't believe you have her. Do you have a picture of the two of you together?" Her hands were shaking, and she clutched them together.
"Not on me."
A siren screamed in the distance, then drew closer. He dropped a kiss on her forehead.
"I'd better go, but I'll get proof."
Reese slammed the door of his truck. She just didn't understand yet. Women were the weaker vessel. Why couldn't she understand he only wanted what was best for her? They belonged together. He only felt whole and strong when she was with him. His life had gone down the toilet after she left. Lost jobs, unpaid bills, too much drinking. But she would come back. He had to believe it. The siren screamed past him. He'd have to snatch the kid, get a picture of the two of them together. He hadn't wanted to have to do that unless there was no other way. The law would get involved. It would have been better for her to come home than the two of them could go get custody. But the kid was the only thing that would bring Hannah home. No matter. He'd have it all, the perfect little family everyone craved. The kid would adore him, and Hannah would rush to meet him when he came home from work. Driving out to the old homestead where Reese had grown up, the years slipped away. Matt had never taken care of his grandmother the way he should, but Reese would, just as he always did. He stopped at the farmhouse and slipped an envelope containing cash into the mailbox. That should tide her over for another month. He should go see her, but she would disapprove of what he planned to do. He drove on to Gina's house. The truck idled in the road as his gaze wandered over the place. They kept it up nice. He couldn't remember who used to live here, but it was always run down. A shadow passing the front window arrested his attention. He shut off the truck and killed the lights. Darkness hid his vehicle. Moments later, the light flipped on, and he could see Matt and a little girl enter the room. He should have realized Matt would stash her here. He wouldn't want to run the risk of Hannah seeing her. Reese grinned. He'd like to be around when Hannah realized how Matt had been lying to her all this time. He stared at the child. His daughter. An unexpected emotion welled up in him as he gazed at her. His. She looked so much like Hannah. Sweet and pure. Completely moldable. Why had he thought to give over her training to someone else? Matt could never be the father Reese could. It was up to Reese to raise her to be the right kind of woman, one who obeyed her husband someday. His gaze touched the child's unruly hair again. He'd made a mistake, but he could fix it yet. Matt carried Caitlin piggyback down the hall toward the bedroom. The evening had gone by way too fast. It was great for Blake and Gina to keep her, but she belonged with him. He eased his daughter off his back and dropped her in the bed. "I'll listen to your prayers. Then I've got to go, Princess." He knelt on the floor beside the bed. She slipped onto the floor beside him and flung herself against him. "I want to come home, Daddy. It's scary out here where it's so dark outside." "I know. It won't be for long." He kissed her again. "I'll bring you a surprise tomorrow. I just want to come home." Matt found it disconcerting to look in his daughter's eyes, so much like Hannah's. The problem was never far from his thoughts. "Me too. Now, let's pray." He was touched to hear her sweet, simple prayer for him and her Aunt Gina, and even for Trudy. As she prayed, he added his own plea for forgiveness for the lie he was living. Was it ever okay to lie, even for a good reason? He was Caitlin's daddy. His role was to protect her, but the blow to his conscience was crippling. Still, he would endure anything for his little princess. He swelled with pride. She was turning out so well, even without a mother. She had a mother. He didn't want to think about it. As Caitlin's father, he was responsible for protecting her from people like Reese. She was too young to deal with all this. He kissed her and tucked the quilt around her. "Night, Princess. See you tomorrow."
"Night, Daddy."
Her voice was muffled and her eyes closed. He tiptoed out the door. The phone was ringing in the living room when he got there, and Gina answered it.
"It's for you," she said. "The captain."
"Hey, what's up?"
Matt said into the phone.
Sturgis's voice blared in his ear.
"I'd been calling your cell for half an hour."
Matt's hand went to his belt. The phone wasn't there.
"I must have left it in the SUV. What's wrong?"
"O'Connor picked the lock at your rental."
The alarm that spread up his spine surprised him.
"On my way."
He ran for the door.
"Gotta go," he called to his sister. "Big problem."
She called after him, but he just waved and ran on to the vehicle. He expected to find the woman cowering in the house, but instead, Hannah was making tea. Ajax lay at her feet. He stared at Hannah. She was dressed in some slinky number that showed off a set of amazing legs. She'd kept those hidden all these years. And she'd done something to her hair. It curled around her face and down her back in a tousle that made her look different. Mysterious. Her hair and eyes brought to mind a roused lioness. Her gaze held determination.
"He's not going to terrorize me," she said. "Not anymore."
"What happened?"
She pointed to the door. "He drugged Ajax, then picked the lock on the kitchen door." Matt knelt by his dog.
"You okay, buddy?"
Ajax whined and licked Matt's hand, then dropped his head onto his paws again. Matt clamped down on the anger that rose within him.
"We're looking for Reese. He can't hide for long. Every deputy in the county is on the lookout."
"You said you were sending a car by here," she reminded him. "Where was it?"
"The car only comes by every hour."
He didn't know what Reese might do, but the man was dangerous.
"I'll stay here tonight. Talk to the captain."
He went to the back door and examined the evidence.
The lock had been jimmied, and scratches marred the brass. Ajax got up and followed, though he was a little wobbly. Stepping outside to the back deck, Matt scanned the dark yard. Reese would be long gone, but maybe he'd left a clue of some kind. He pulled a flashlight from his belt and let its beam sweep the ground. The recent rain had left the dirt soft. The grass was matted down under the kitchen window. The hair rose on the back of Matt's neck. Reese had stood here and watched the women. What did the man want? Something so simple as wanting his wife back? Matt feared Reese was after more, that he wanted Caitlin too, but maybe not. He prowled around the yard for about half an hour, then headed to the back door. The screen door creaked as Blake came through it. We got a call. Moe's mother, Nora, was run off the road in her buggy. She's dead. Matt winced. This would hit Hannah hard. It all seems directed at Hannah's family. Blake shrugged. Might just look that way. This is very targeted. Could it be that Reese had a vendetta against all of Hannah's family? Maybe he wanted to strip her of all her support except for himself. Abusers isolated their victims, but this took it to a whole new level. We've got to pick Reese up and question him. When did this happen? About an hour ago. But Reese was here, terrorizing Hannah. Unease rustled in his gut. What was going on? Did you tell Hannah about her aunt yet? Yeah. The screen door opened again. Hannah's strained face was wet, but she held on to her composure. I need to be with my family. They'll be hurting about this. I'd like to go out first thing in the morning. You all need protection. If we put you together in one place, maybe I can protect you all. He wanted to tell her he was sorry about her aunt, but the words clogged his throat. She'd already been through so much. When he finally got the condolences out, she turned and walked back inside. He knew she wasn't about to let him see her grief. 16. The Tumbling Blocks quilt is built piece by piece. It's a picture of how the Amish life is built around community. Hannah Schwartz in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Hannah could count the days, the weeks, the months, the years since she'd seen Luca's crooked smile. 10 years, 6 months, 11 days, an eternity. Yesterday. Tuesday morning, she sat in the car beside Angie and listened to the tick of the engine cooling. Could he really tear out his love for her? Their past? Like he pulled up the weeds in the garden? It seemed as though he had. He'd been back for several days and hadn't come to find her. Maybe he was in the greenhouse. Oh, she was just making excuses. The fact was, he didn't want to see her. If he did, he would have come to find her. She should have talked to her aunt sooner. Now whatever Nora knew was lost for good. Hannah had thought she had time. Are we just going to sit here? Angie asked. Reconciliation doesn't come unless you're face to face. It doesn't matter. He'll do whatever the bishop says. Hannah kept her eyes on the front door. Please, Lord, let him come to greet me. A useless prayer. God had forsaken her. Dressed in an A-line skirt and a sleeveless, surpluse blouse of Angie's, she felt like a child playing dress-up, and that was the way she wanted it. Maybe she could step outside herself, be someone else, someone who could handle the rejection, someone who would laugh at the pain. Let's go. She shoved open her door and got out. A chicken fled from her feet, then turned and glared as if she were trying to steal the bug it had been after. She let Ajax out of the car. The dog's presence always made her feel safer. The front door remained closed. The breeze ruffled her hair. No noise came from the open, screenless windows, but she sensed the family watched her from inside the house. Angie was beside her. Want me to go first? No. I'll go. Hannah walked past the fragrant phlox that mounted the steps to the door. She rapped firmly on the screen door. The seconds ticked by, with no one appearing. She knocked again, louder this time. Angie's fist thundered on the door when again no one came. We're not going anywhere until we see Luca, she called. Hannah shot her a quick look. He won't respond to open anger.
He's not responding at all right now.
Hannah nodded. He will. She settled herself onto the top step and waited. Angie shrugged and did the same. A kitten crept near, and Hannah tapped her leg and cooed to the small feline. The scent of horse and hay from the barn blew on the wind. She'd forgotten the stillness here. No whir of electric appliances, no cars, just the peace of the past. If she closed her eyes, she could hear her mother's laughter on the wind. The high sound of the wind in the trees could have been her father's call for supper. She could sit here forever and remember. Nearly 15 minutes passed before the door creaked open and Sarah stepped out onto the porch. Caught at a disadvantage with her friend towering over her, Hannah scrambled to her feet and smoothed her skirt. "I'd like to see Luca."
"He's in the greenhouse."
Sarah chewed on her lip and didn't meet Hannah's gaze.
"Thanks. I'll be back. I'm going to have to stay here for a while."
Hannah didn't wait for Sarah to answer. With the kitten leaping at her feet, she headed toward the greenhouse. She should have checked there first anyway, but she'd been reluctant to enter and see Luca in her father's place. The fragrance hit her first. Floral scents from the roses by the door were punctuated with the undertones of earth and seasoned with the stink of fertilizer. The scent of childhood. As a kid, her job had been to deadhead the old blossoms. It seemed all her life she tended to things too late.
"This is a little creepy," Angie said from behind her.
"It's like you could turn around and get lost in here, or find a dead body on the floor."
Hannah smiled at her friend's fears. This was home to her.
"Luca?" she called. She walked the rows and examined the plants, strong and healthy. They had thrived under his care. A head bobbed up by the tomatoes, and Luca turned to face her. He looked different, older, more tired. Maybe it was just her imagination, but as she neared, she could swear she saw warmth toward her still lurking in his eyes, and at least he was looking at her instead of ignoring her as he'd done at the funeral.
"Hannah," his voice seemed a little thick, "you should not be here."
He glanced through the windows down the empty road.
"I had to see you, Luca."
The Amish people were not overtly demonstrative, though their love for each other ran deep, love that cared enough to confront, to correct, and to wound when necessary.
"You look good."
His gaze swept over her clothes, then back to her face.
"Are you happy with this life you've chosen?"
"Happiness."
Hannah wasn't sure she knew what that was.
"I'm content," she said. "I have a good job, good friends."
She pulled Angie from behind her.
"This is my friend, Angie."
Luca nodded to Angie.
"It might have been better for you not to see our disagreement, miss."
"She's missed you every day she's been gone from here," Angie said.
He flushed at the reproof in her voice.
"It was her own choice."
"We all make mistakes," Angie said.
But not everyone's mistakes resulted in calamity.
"Let's not talk about the past," Hannah said.
It would do no good to argue with him.
"I need to talk to you, Luca. Explain what's been going on."
"I'm due back for lunch, but I'm afraid you can't eat with us."
His voice broke. Pariah. Anathema. The words pierced her heart.
"I need your help."
"Will you talk to the bishop?"
he asked. "I've already talked to him. I can't come back. I think you know that. But I want to stay here. Me, Angie, and a deputy. We are all in danger, including your family. You know someone killed Mo and Aunt Nora? Whoever it is, he seems to be targeting our family. You or Sarah or your kids could be next. The sheriff can only spare one deputy. The detective in charge of the case thought we'd be better off together, and there's not enough room for everyone where I was staying in town."
"We accept whatever the Lord gives from his hand,"
Luca said.
"If God sends us heartache, it was meant to be."
Though his coldness failed to move her, his fatalistic attitude caused her anger to flare.
"The killer is evil. I won't stand by and let evil have its way when we can prevent it.
God's will be done. But in this case, I don't believe we are targeted. You've changed, Hannah. It is as I expected.
His thinly veiled contempt stung.
You have no idea where I've been or what I've endured, and you don't need to know, but I won't stand back and let you or your family be harmed. If I have to, I'll sleep in the barn, but I'm not leaving.
She folded her arms over her chest.
Lucas stared back at her without expression. I must talk to the bishop. I'm a deacon now. I have responsibilities.
A deacon?
Hannah hadn't heard. No wonder he held back. When those in the congregation strayed, he would be the first to gently persuade them to put away the thing that tempted them. He had to uphold the ban in public, especially.
She put her hand on his arm. We are kin, Luca. It isn't that easy to just toss me aside.
You left us, Hannah.
His voice stayed calm and assured, and we would welcome you back with open arms if you reconciled with your husband, and he converted as well. His intent gaze lingered on her face.
Hannah studied his face, the smooth cheeks above the long beard, the brown eyes that used to see everything, the worn hat covering his Dutch boy haircut. Sarah was taking good care of him. A tiny tear on his coat had been expertly mended. In her sweep of his appearance, she almost missed the meaning of the way his Adam's apple bobbed and the way he refused to look away from her gaze. He was trying to hide his emotions and doing a good job of it. If she didn't know him so well, she might have even bought it. This was as hard for him as it was for her. He didn't want to turn her away. It was only for love that he was trying to do the right thing. His words came back to haunt her. We would welcome you back if you reconciled with your husband.
Rhys said he'd converted. What if it was true?
I'm going to get my things and bring them in, she said softly. You know, as well as I do, that you can't deny me sanctuary here in my own home. I still own half this house, don't I?
Red crept into his cheeks.
Yes,
he admitted. I always expected you to come back, asking for money.
I thought you knew me better than that.
Rhys, he looked down at his black shoes. You have more right to this property than I do.
Rhys never pushed me to get the house. He didn't want me to have anything to do with you. This is one thing that's not his fault, but mine. I'll stay out of your way. I will not leave you, Luca.
He sent her a pleading look from under his brows. Please don't endear the children to you.
Ignoring them would be the hardest thing, but she nodded. Her cousins were darling, and she longed to scoop them onto her lap and tell them stories. She and Angie went to the car and hauled their suitcases to the house. Luca followed.
I didn't bring the cats yet, she said. I'll get them later this afternoon.
Cats?
Luca asked.
Four of them.
She flashed a smile up at him, but he looked away and said no more.
Where do you want us?
He held the door open for them.
Your old room is now a guest room. I will have Naomi move her toys over to Sharon's room. Wait a moment.
He left them standing in the kitchen with their suitcases and disappeared into a hallway. Moments later, the heavy tread of his feet went up the steps.
Hannah heard Sarah's voice murmuring, and she could sense the stress in it.
Hannah believed that her presence would stop anything bad from happening. Maybe this belief was rooted in a misguided sense of her own control. But her instincts told her she had to be here.
Matt understood that his minutes with Caitlin were drops of water draining through a sieve. Maybe that was fatalistic, but with Hannah showing no signs of leaving soon, it was only a matter of time before the truth came out. Matt wanted to hold his daughter close, treasure every moment. Frogs bellowed from the creek, a song as mournful as Matt's mood. He sat on the porch swing with Caitlin on his lap. Hannah wasn't going anywhere until she'd exhausted every avenue. All she had to do was show that picture to one other person at the jail, and the jig was up. He should see a lawyer to find out what he could do to avert a tragedy. No way would he abandon his daughter the way his mother had abandoned him.
The swing swayed under them, and the gentle movement lulled him.
"Me and Aunt Gina went to visit Grandma Trudy today, and she never smiled at me. Why is she so grumpy, Daddy?"
Why, indeed? He had never figured it out himself. "She's had a hard life."
"How come you don't have a mommy and daddy? Trudy is your grandma, too, isn't she? All the kids at preschool have two grandmas. I've only got one."
She'd asked the question before, but Matt had always managed to put her off. "My dad died just like your mommy. My mom went away, Princess."
"Did your mom go away to heaven like my mommy?"
"No. She just went away." He didn't tell her that he'd come home on his birthday to an empty house. He didn't explain how he'd gone through the house calling her name. She didn't need to know he'd fed himself and cried all night for 3 days until a neighbor called Child Protective Services. "I went to live with my Grandma Trudy then." Gina had been luckier. She'd been staying with their aunt over spring break. He tightened his grip around Caitlin. She would never feel abandoned while he had breath in his body.
"Maybe she'll come back. I'd like to meet her."
Caitlin's voice grew softer, and her eyes closed. Rhythmic breathing followed. "I wish she'd come back, too," Matt muttered against his sleeping daughter's hair. She didn't often take a nap. He stood with her in his arms and carried her to bed. His sister was watching her afternoon soap opera. The TV flickered, but the sound was down so low, he wondered how she could hear it. He tucked the covers around Caitlin and pressed a kiss against her hair before joining Gina in the living room.
"Sit down, Matt," she said. "You're keeping something from me. Work is always intense, but you've never asked me to keep Caitlin before. You know I love her, but I want to know what's going on."
The need to talk to someone, to confess, gripped him in a stranglehold. "Caitlin's real mother is here in town looking for her."
"Looking for her? What do you mean?"
He shook his head. "Her mother never gave up Caitlin. Someone stole the baby from her and gave her to us." Almost too late, he caught back Reese's name. "We didn't get her in the usual way. Annalise heard something at the door and Ajax was going crazy barking. She opened the door and found a newborn baby girl in a carrier." Gina pointed her finger at him.
"You never told me all this. I only heard a baby had come through for you."
"We didn't want Caitlin to hear about it someday and feel more abandoned than she would when she learned of her adoption. There's something devastating about being tossed on someone's porch. She was all swaddled up against the chill, and we found her immediately, just as the kidnapper thought we would." One peek into a wrinkled little face had triggered love at first sight. He still remembered the way she opened her eyes and looked at him. He and Annalise had been trying to have a baby for 5 years and were just starting to talk about adoption. It seemed Caitlin was a gift from heaven. With his position at the sheriff's department, it had been easy to keep the circumstances quiet and to put the adoption through. They told friends and family a private adoption had been arranged and they'd gone to the hospital to get her. A quiet search was made for her parents, but no traces of them were ever found. A few months later, the adoption was final. And final was the word. He couldn't give her up.
"Have you spoken with the mother?"
"I haven't told her I have Caitlin, if that's what you mean."
"You don't want this woman to find her."
"Heck, I don't want her to find her. I love Caitlin. There would be a huge custody battle."
"Exactly."
At least he had some support now.
17. The chevron quilt is an interesting pattern, and one that has special meaning when you look at the way the Amish won't wear a uniform or serve in the military. Hannah Schwartz, on the Today Show. Hannah's gaze kept returning to the center of the sitting room where she'd found the bodies of her family. No trace of the symbol marred the walls. The 3 hours she'd been here had dragged by, hung up on tragic memories haunting every corner and peering from every shadow. Tableware clanged against plates in the kitchen. Hannah could hear one of her cousins talking to Sarah in German. The guttural tones took her back to her own childhood. Seated on the sofa with a tray, she picked at the food on her plate. Angie tipped her head and listened.
"How well do you still remember your German?"
She'd insisted on joining Hannah for dinner.
"I'm a little rusty. I found that out when I tried to talk to the children the last time we were here.
Ours is a Swiss-German dialect that's a little different from what the English call Pennsylvania Dutch.
Is Park County the sect's only home?
No. But the majority of the Swiss Amish came to Indiana. Our group came later than those in Pennsylvania. We made our way to the state around 1840, directly from Switzerland. Most Amish people here in Park County are from Pennsylvania and speak Pennsylvania Dutch. Most of us here in Indiana who speak the Swiss dialect are up around Bern, but our district was a plant from there.
Are the languages close enough to understand each other?
It's a little challenging, Hannah smiled. If I were to talk with a Pennsylvania Dutch Amish woman, it would be easier to speak English. We don't socialize much with the other group either. Angie studied her face.
You keep saying we.
Hannah's laugh felt strained. I suppose I do. I hadn't noticed. I'll always be Amish at heart.
How do you mean?
Our simple love of family, our neighbors, it's ingrained in me, and I'll always carry it with me. I might carry a cell phone and cut my hair, but inside, I'm Amish.
Angie nodded.
I can see that. It's one reason people are drawn to you.
Drawn to her?
Hannah had never noticed. She scooped up a spoonful of her cold fruit soup, mashed strawberries, milk, and sugar over bread. She hadn't had anything like it since she left the county, and she nearly smacked her lips over the fresh taste. Sarah was a good cook. The chicken pot pie had pastry flaky enough to melt in her mouth, and the homemade root beer rivaled Mom's.
I had no idea there was so much diversity among the Amish. You should mention that in the book.
Each district can be different, too, Hannah said. But most people don't realize there are such distinctions. The noises intensified in the kitchen, and she knew they were finished with supper. She put her spoon down.
I think I'm done, too.
We should help with the dishes. They won't let me, but I can sit at the table while you help. Hannah rose and went to the kitchen with her utensils. Ajax followed at her feet. Sarah glanced up quickly, then ducked her head so all Hannah could see was the top of her cap. The tiny pleats in the prayer bonnet had required hours of ironing. Hannah put her dishes onto the stack by the sink, then retreated to sit at the table. She folded her hands in her lap.
"Can I help you with the dishes?" Angie asked.
"No, thank you. The children will help." Angie raised her brows and glanced back at Hannah, then joined her at the table. Sarah moved a small step stool close to the sink, and Sharon crawled up to wait for her mother. Sarah took the kettle from the wood stove and poured hot water into the sink. Naomi took a dish towel from the drawer and stood on tiptoes to grab the wet dishes as they were ready to be dried.
"Amazing,"
Angie muttered, her gaze on the children.
Most kids do everything they can to get out of chores.
The girl's willingness seemed so normal, so right to Hannah. We are taught from a young age that work is blessed. Idle hands are the devil's workshop. We enjoy spending time with one another, too. The girls want to be like their mom, and the boys like their dad. They're eager to begin to learn the chores and to help out. My mother began to teach me to quilt when I was 3.
"Do your children ever fight?"
Angie asked Sarah. Sarah smiled and shook her head. "It is not allowed."
"Where's Luca?"
Hannah asked. Sarah's smile faded. "Feeding the horses and chickens?" So far, Hannah had detected no trace of the camaraderie she and Sarah had shared as teenagers. Hannah mourned its loss.
"When did you and Luca marry?"
She kept her tone light and friendly.
"About a year after you left, 9 years ago."
"Your oldest is only 6. It was unusual for so much time to pass before a child arrived.
I had a few accidents."
Sarah seemed to force the words out.
"I'm sorry.
The Lord's will be done."
"Of course. And your family is beautiful."
Sarah's eyes finally softened.
"Thank you.
How are your parents, your brothers and sisters?"
"They are well. Mom is dealing with a bit of arthritis, but she has good spirits about it."
The smile that flickered across her lips disappeared. "You might spoil everything, Hannah. Don't you care?" The words pierced Hannah to the bone.
"I've always cared," she said softly.
"I can't tell you how many times I picked up the phone to call Luca at work. I didn't want to make things worse for him.
Yet, you're here now, aren't you?"
Heat crept up Hannah's neck. It hurt to be so unwanted. It used to be different. She fought to keep her voice from trembling. I need to find the child. Sarah turned from the sink and came to where Hannah sat. Do you really think the child is yours? And what if she is, Hannah? Would you rip her from a family who loves her? I don't know. In spite of her resolve, her voice shook. You know how important family is to me. Not anymore. You turned your back on your family for lust. That's harsh, Angie put in. You don't know what Hannah's been through. God chastises his children. At least you admit I'm his child, Hannah said in a low voice. I admit nothing. What are you so afraid of? Angie asked. I'm not afraid, Sarah pressed her lips together. But Angie was right. Hannah recognized the fear now in the way Sarah's hands trembled. Are you hiding something, Sarah? Of course not. The strings on Sarah's cap fluttered as she shook her head. Do you know where the little girl is being kept? Sarah grabbed up a basket from the counter. I'm going to gather eggs. The door shut behind her, and Hannah stared after her through the window. She hadn't answered the question. Hannah followed her. The night air cooled her hot cheeks. She found Luca and Sarah huddled together near the barn. They stopped speaking when she approached. Was the fear she saw in Sarah's eyes fear of the future? Look, let's clear the air. I'm not going to throw you out. I don't even want anything from the property. Luca crossed his arms over his chest. Half of it rightly belongs to you. I've been setting aside half of the profits every year you've been gone. I don't want it. Blood money. That's all it was. No, you will take it. It's not as much as the greenhouse is worth, but it will be a steady income if you will allow me to continue to manage the business. She recognized the inflexible tone of his voice, but he couldn't stop her from doing what she wanted with it. Maybe she'd set it aside for his girls. How about we compromise? I'll take what you've got set aside as a final payment. No more after that. That's my final offer. He wouldn't get the reference to a TV show, but she had to say it and smile anyway. I cannot do that. The house and property are worth even more. Hannah glanced back to the house. Let's break out the accordion, Luca. I haven't yodeled since I left. We'll sing all the old songs and pretend we're kids again. I haven't played since you left, Hannah. I'm a deacon now. I got rid of the accordion. Is my guitar still in the barn? We can have the kids watch for buggies just like we used to. She started past him toward the barn, but he grabbed her arm. I didn't want to be a deacon, but the vote came to me. Don't make it harder, Hannah. She stared at him. Do you still yodel? Yeah, the girls, they are learning too. Could we do that tonight? Luca glanced from Hannah to Sarah. Yeah, maybe it would be okay. Sarah had no expression, and Hannah wondered if he hoped the yodel fest would ease the tension. Did Sarah value her position as a deacon's wife so much that she never liked having fun anymore? The girl she was 10 years ago had vanished when the black apron replaced the white one. Matt rubbed his eyes, bleary from staring at the screen. Blake sat sprawled in a chair on the other side of the desk. His eyes were closed, and a snore rumbled through his mouth. The clock on the wall read only 8:30, but they hadn't slept since Reese surprised Hannah last night, questioning neighbors, tracing leads, all to find nothing. Blake had come straight from Shipshawana, and Matt decided to let him sleep a while before waking him to demand to hear what he'd found out. He wished he could sleep in his own bed tonight, rather than on the sofa at the Schwartz's, but duty called. He hadn't checked his email all day, so he clicked over to it. The inbox contained mostly work-related requests for information or case follow-ups that he had been copied on. No new burglaries. He glanced at Blake. He'd been out of town. Coincidence? An email marked urgent caught his attention as he was about to click out of the program. The subject line read, "Hello, son." The air seemed close and hot. And if he'd had the energy, he would have opened the window or turned up the air. He thought he'd clicked on the message, but then he realized he was still sitting there, staring at the screen. If he didn't know better, he'd have thought he was having a heart attack. A weight lay on his chest, and his arms were numb. His hand holding the mouse moved slowly, and the cursor paused over the email. For just one second, he wanted to linger and not know. In this case, ignorance might be bliss. He could hang on to the hope just a little longer. He swallowed hard and double-clicked the email. The message sprang onto the screen, and he leaned forward to read it. "Hello, Matt. I heard you've been looking for me. If this is true, please reply to this email. Love, Mom." Could it really be her? How did she find his work email? Wait, he hadn't left town. She had. It would be no problem to get his email. It was listed on the department's website. His hand shook as he placed him on the keyboard. He typed a quick reply asking her to meet him. He tried not to sound too desperate. Desperation might drive her away. And did his words sound accusing or judgmental? He reread the note. "Mom, good to hear from you. Can we meet? How about at the coffee shop tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock? Just let me know. Love, your son, Matt." Joy exploded in his chest. Whenever he thought of his mom, he was 8 years old again, running home to see her. He reminded himself she wouldn't be the same woman he had last seen. She would be in her 50s, probably with gray hair and wrinkles. Was she remarried? What if she had kids with another man? The thought that she might have loved another child more than him and Gina compressed his chest again. He warned himself not to get his hopes up. After all this time, if she really was trying to find him, her motive might be to ask for money or something. It wasn't likely she had missed him as much as he'd missed her. Blake yawned and sat up. His hair stood on end. "Man, I'm beat." Matt clicked out of his email. "What did you find out?" "Found the bishop. He claims Reese started coming there a month ago. So it's fairly recent. Probably a ploy to get Hannah back. That'd be my guess. The bishop says Reese had been faithful to the teachings. Except for driving a vehicle. Well, yeah, there's that. But the bishop didn't know about it. He said Reese told him he'd hired a driver for a trip and would come in a few weeks with his wife and child." The muscles in Matt's belly tensed. Over his dead body, no one was taking Caitlin away from him. "Thanks. You'd better get home to Gina." Blake glanced at his watch. "Yikes! I told her I'd be home for supper. If I'm late, she'll be suspicious all over again." He bolted from his chair and ran for the door. Matt followed him outside. He needed to get out to the Schwartz house before they all went to bed. As he drove north out of town, his thoughts kept drifting to his mother's email. Could it be real? He was afraid to hope. Dim yellow light shone through the windows of the house when he pulled into the driveway. He got out of the SUV and started toward the front door. A warble of some kind came to his ears. Was that yodeling? He stopped and listened. The German song rolled out across the yard, and though it was supposed to be joyous, he heard the undercurrent of a lost time that would never come again, no matter how hard they tried to find it. The children's voices murmuring their prayer slipped under the closed door. The sunset still glowed in the west, though it was 9 o'clock. Indiana had only recently started to follow daylight saving time, and Hannah wondered if her people had adopted the English way of changing their clocks. "You sure you don't mind sharing a bedroom?" she asked Angie. "We could talk about some publicity." Angie sat cross-legged on the single bed. "How's the quilt coming?" "You know I've struggled to work on it since we got here. There hasn't been much time. I really want this one for the cover. The triangle is the underpinning of the Amish faith." "Hannah, the photographer will want pictures of it in a month and a half. You're not even close to finished." "I know. I'll work on it a little while now." Hannah pulled the large plastic container out from under the bed where she'd placed it earlier. "This room used to be mine." She lifted the lid and rummaged for the last square she'd been working on. "Homie, what chapter are you on with the book?" "The one about chevron quilts." "What's significant about them?" Hannah thought a moment as her needle wove in and out of the colorful fabric. "A chevron is a badge or insignia. The Amish believe very much in following secular authority,
in leading a law-abiding life. It's very rare to find any lawbreakers among the Amish, and murder is practically unheard of. But the one thing they refuse to do is to serve in the military. In fact, that's why the men don't wear a mustache, only a beard.